Hey everybody, welcome to the very first episode of Inside Acting Podcast. My name is Trevor Elgott.
And my name is Albert Meyer.
And this is a podcast for artists by artists. What we do is we interview casting directors, agents, writers, filmmakers, musicians, any sort of artist in the LA area, and hopefully soon around the country, and maybe if we get ambitious, even the world, then we bring those interviews to you.
So the idea behind the podcast is that collectively, as artists, we're going to share best practices, good ideas, and hopefully inspire one another to take our art to the next level. That could include anything from the art and the creative process itself to being financially independent as an artist to being environmentally conscious as an artist. Whatever it is, we're going to share these ideas, and we invite you to even send us your ideas and your questions and your thoughts, and we'll... throughout the podcast, we'll be telling you the ways in which you'll be able to do that.
Right on. Yeah, InsideActingPodcast.com is where you can find out more about us if that wasn't thorough enough. So let's talk a little bit about obviously the why of why we're doing this is hopefully pretty clear, but let's talk about kind of where this came from.
Yeah, Trevor, you were inspired by another podcast, actually.
Yeah, actually, this is not an entirely original idea. I found a podcast online a few years ago called Everything Acting, and that's actually online at everythingactingpodcast.com, and it's a great podcast. It's the same kind of thing. It's run by kind of two women in New York, slightly different demographic, and they do the same kind of thing, but there's nothing on the West Coast like that, and there's nothing from the kind of the 20-something dude perspective. So I figured, why not get that started out here?
And now, they're New York-based?
They're New
York-based. It's East Coast. It's mostly East Coast theater and entertainment industry stuff, but they're New York-based.
In fact, as long as I've been listening to that podcast, and it's been a few years, they haven't done any sort of LA-based stuff. Every once in a while, they'll like have a Skype chat with an actor who's out here, but he always is based out of New York. So
interesting.
Okay. I thought it'd be cool to have something... LA-based or West Coast-based. And also just to kind of, you know, while we're going to be actor-centric, kind of go beyond that as well. You know, a lot of actors are also writers or painters or musicians and that kind of thing. And
right.
I think that what applies to one applies to the other.
Yeah. And I think hopefully... because of that, we'll be fulfilling some kind of niche here in Los Angeles. You know, if neither one of us have found anything like this, why not, you know, come up with it ourselves and get it out there so that there is this resource in Los Angeles, like those, like Everything Acting Podcast is a resource for New York-based artists. Even though, you know, you probably get a lot of information. I mean, you yourself have been listening to that podcast for a really long time, so...
Yeah, it's really great. I've been listening to it for a while, and I listen to it on my iPod in my car. And since we spend so much time in traffic in LA, I thought, what a great thing to have, you know, an audio podcast about acting and about, you know, being an artist, and actually the nuts and bolts of everything from marketing to the art to the spiritual process. I mean, it's pretty involved, and I always finish an episode of that podcast feeling so energized and inspired. And I was like, wouldn't it be cool to walk around with this feeling all the time? Why not kind of make it ourselves?
So. Right. Excellent. Yeah. When I was in New York, the one time I've been able to visit, there's a lot of people on the subway with, you know, their earbuds in their ears kind of tuning out. And so maybe that's how they digest their podcasts and their music. So here in LA, you're right. Yeah, we do spend a lot of time in traffic. So if you're out there and you're listening to this and you're sitting in traffic, hopefully we're helping you to pass the time and giving you some information at the same time.
Yeah, cool. So let's talk a little bit about, just so people know, before we actually dive in and start this episode and series of episodes, let's talk a little bit about who we are.
Oh, that's a good idea.
So I know, Albert, you're an actor, obviously.
Yeah, I started acting when I was about 13, you know, with school productions. But apparently, according to my parents, I've always... and I guess there's video evidence of this. Don't try to track it down, anyone, I swear.
Put it on the website.
Don't try to get a hold of that, anyone, I swear, especially you, Trev. Apparently, I was, you know, always a big ham growing up. singing and dancing and sort of performing for performing for my family, but started doing school plays when I was like 13, and eventually when I was in high school went to a theater camp, a theater summer camp called the California State Summer School for the Arts, which is on the CalArts campus in Valencia, and that experience is what made me decide to actually go to school to study acting. So I went to UCLA, got my BA in theater with an emphasis in acting and musical theater, and then after graduating from UCLA, stayed in Los Angeles because it is such a mecca for the entertainment industry. Since UCLA, I've had some really great opportunities because of UCLA and also just because of the work that I've put into my own acting career. I've done a lot of professional theater and even some TV gigs and that kind of thing. But we all have our ups and downs, and hopefully this podcast will inspire me, and hopefully you guys that are out there listening will inspire me to have new ideas. I'm really, really interested in hearing what your ideas are, and as I said before, we'll talk about ways of getting in touch with us. But how about you, Trevor? Let's hear about.
Well, you're not off the hook that easily. Don't you have a childhood story to share about your first paid gig?
Oh my God, you're going to make me tell that. Okay,
it's such a good one.
Okay, so when I was about 8 years old, I learned. I'm really good at memorizing things still to this day. I can memorize. I can commit entire films to memory. It's kind of this bizarre. Trait that I have.
We could probably do Wounded ability. Right here. You and I, there's probably two or three scenes we could bust out right now.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I still have, I was actually doing a monologue from that earlier. That's so funny that you mentioned that. Yeah. It was a show that Trevor and I were in together. To add some context to that. And I was really good at committing things to memory, and I would memorize entire films. I memorized like Forrest Gump. Like the entire film from start to finish. It was really bizarre. I'm surprised my parents were never worried about me. But when I was about, I guess, 8 is when it came out. I can't remember exactly when it came out. But I committed the entire Disney film Aladdin to memory. All the songs, all the lines, every character's lines. And at one point, I don't know how this happened, but I performed it in my aunt and uncle's living room for my aunt and uncle. And my uncle gave me $2 because he didn't have to rent the movie. He didn't have to rent Aladdin. And I just remember looking at those $2 and being like, oh, you can get paid to do this? And so to this day, I consider that my first paid acting gig.
That is such an awesome... I love that story. That's why I made you tell it again.
Thanks, bud.
Just out of curiosity, did you also memorize the dances and stuff?
From Aladdin?
I mean, there's some like there's some parts where there's like, I think there's some dancing in that
movie. A little bit, yeah. Not really like necessarily the choreography of it, but I remember it's so funny what you remember from these instances. I remember doing gestures from the movie like that people would do, like Princess Jasmine folding her arms when she got upset and stuff, and I would do those, and my aunt would crack up laughing. She'd be like, "He's doing the moves. He's doing the moves." I'm a very. I think it happens through rhythm. I don't know how we got on this subject, but in terms of the memorizing, I think it happens through rhythm because when I memorize a play, I'm in a play. I usually end up memorizing everyone's lines.
Mm-hmm. I do the same thing. And I can't go out there if I don't know everybody's lines.
Really? That's so fascinating to me because I know actors who are like, you're crazy. You're nuts. I don't know how you do that. And what happens is if somebody drops a line, like say in a run through, hopefully no lines get dropped when you got an audience in front of you. But if somebody drops a line, I hear it happen. I feel it happen before I realize what is actually going on. I'm like, something just happened. A line drop is sort of like a pause button. It's like breaking that rhythm. And I think it's that rhythm that I memorize first before the words come.
That's really interesting. There's a couple different approaches to acting, but that's a really interesting approach to think of it as almost like a beat or a song. I mean, I can think of plays in terms of arc, and there's a structure there, but you can kind of play within that structure and bend certain aspects of it. So the timing might be off at certain points, but to think of it actually as a march almost is really interesting.
Interesting that you use the word beat because that's analogous with word that we actually use to
what is a beat anyway? I've always been like, there's so many definitions of beat. Screenwriters put it in there. Directors have a definition.
It's gonna depend. Yeah, it's definitely. It's just gonna depend on who you ask for sure. I'm not even gonna try to define it right now because I don't want to. You know, I'd have to put it together. I'd have to write something down before I could even think about doing that. But so how about you, bud? Let's hear your story.
Yeah. God, let's see. Born and raised in Philadelphia. I first knew I wanted to be an actor when my family took me to go see Ghostbusters whenever that came out.
Oh, that story. Yeah.
No, this is a good story. I went to... I'm kind of... secretly very proud of this story, actually. My dad tells it, I'm like, oh, dad, stop. No, really.
No, but, please, you know, keep telling it. Yes.
They took me to go see Ghostbusters when I was a kid. I think it was with my grandparents and my mom and dad, and we went to a diner afterwards, and I was so taken by the gargoyles in the story. I thought they were the coolest fucking things ever that I wanted to be a gargoyle. So I went under the table at the diner, and I sat in a gargoyle pose. Like crouched down, my arms up by my face, kind of like this, and I sat there for 45 minutes.
45 minutes.
That's so the story goes. My dad may have embellished things. I don't know, but he said like he said he was like kicking me. They would have wait staff come over and kind of beckon me out, and I just was not budging, dude. I was a gargoyle, like, and that was it. That was very method.
It's very method. Yeah. Very method of you, Trevor.
But that kind of. Sparked a small obsession with Dan Aykroyd for about 10 years. I can't explain it. I just really love Dan Aykroyd.
Dan Aykroyd's great.
No, he's awesome.
He's fantastic.
And this is back in the 80s when he was still like when he was still working. Sorry, Dan, if you're listening.
Yeah, Dan, call us.
Yeah, you need to do more work, dude.
Send us an email. We'll interview you and ask you what's going on.
But I did that. And then when I was in... middle school, high school, I got into music and started doing that. Taught myself guitar and piano, and I was in a few bands here and there. Did a few plays, went off to get my degree, my BA in theater from Westchester University, Pennsylvania. Went and studied with New York Stage and Film Company at Vassar College for a summer. Did a few plays in Philadelphia. My first solid paying gig was a show at the Walnut Street Theater in Philadelphia. I got paid $1,500 for it.
Amazing.
I know. I was like, cha-ching. So I came out to LA ready to make some money and didn't quite work out that way.
Slam!
Yeah, I got a little spoiled by the Philadelphia art scene there, which is actually very cool. It's a very cool underground art scene. But I've been out here about 6 years now. I'm also a member of the Los Angeles Theater Ensemble, which Albert actually co-founded.
Yeah, I didn't even talk about that.
Yeah, about 5 years ago.
The Los Angeles Theater Ensemble is a theater company that I am a founding member of. That started in late 2004, early 2005. So we're now we're about to enter into our sixth season, and we work out of the Powerhouse Theater South Santa Monica. It's right on the border of Santa Monica and Venice. Yeah. Check us out on the web, www.latensemble.com.
Yeah. I think I joined the ensemble about 2-3 months after you guys got off the ground.
Yeah, it was pretty quick. Yeah. You were around really early because you were involved with our first flagship production, which was Kindred.
Yeah, which was such an amazing show. I was able to play the guard in that a couple times. Mm-hmm. But I always fantasize that when I make it big and famous and everything, and I get interviewed, and somebody asks me like, "What's the most important thing that ever happened to you out here as an actor?" I would always say, hands down, the Los Angeles Theater Ensemble, because having an artistic home like that is so open, where there aren't anybody that there aren't the members don't trash talk each other. There's very little competition or politics. Nobody's backstabbing anybody else. Everybody's there to do the work, not to do work as a vehicle to be seen by an agent or a casting director.
Right. Which, if you're not familiar with the Los Angeles theater scene, that is something that is very typical. I'm not going to, I would never name names or talk about, you know, theater companies, but there's a lot of them out there. There's actually, this is an interesting statistic, you know, New York is known as like the theater town. There's actually more theaters in Los Angeles than there are in New York. The problem is there's just a lot more bad theater in Los Angeles than New York, and that's because so much of it is not done for the passion of theater or for the, you know, the passion of the work or the subject matter or what have you. It's done as a showcase.
And that's the thing. I don't think the training's any different. I really don't think the training's any different. I think that it's just exactly what you said. I think it's a passion thing. I think it's they're not there to tell a story and connect with people. They're there to kind of sing and dance and have a light shined on them.
Mm.
Maybe that's a really negative, horrible thing to say and it's a way to look at it, but I've seen a couple shows that are exactly like that. And if you're in LA and you've seen theater, you've probably seen one or two shows like that too.
Yeah, well, let's do this. If you're listening to this and you've been in one of these shows that you know, maybe you signed up for it because you knew it was going to be a showcase type show. Let us know what your experience was. We'd love to know.
That'd be awesome. Yeah.
You know,
send us an email. We'll read it on the air or on the recording. Whatever you want to call it. And I'm sorry, that probably sounded really snobby, what I just said there.
No, I didn't mean
to like put us on a pedestal or anything. I mean, but, you know, I think that it's very obvious
when that kind of
theater happens, and it's tough to overlook if you're serious about your craft.
Right.
I hate that word, but if you're serious about your artistry.
It doesn't necessarily, we don't have to even be talking about this subject matter with regards to the Los Angeles Theater Ensemble. I mean, we could not be involved in a theater company and still know that that type of theater out there exists, you know?
Yeah.
I've been fortunate enough to avoid that kind of thing, but I know a lot of my friends who have not, and I've been to see those shows just like you have. So, I don't think it's snobby. I think if you take the fact that we're in a theater company out of the equation, it just is what it is, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
So, had your first paying gig?
Yeah.
Moved out to Los Angeles.
Moved out to LA, got on board with the Los Angeles Theater Ensemble, which, like I said, is the best thing that could have happened to me. And, you know, I've had spurts of success here and there, but lately I've kind of been of the mind, and I don't know if we'll have time to talk about this today, but if you are solely focused on acting or one form of expression, I feel like your chances of being just a happy person are a lot less, because this is an industry that's kind of designed to capitalize on burnout, almost, in a way.
Hmm.
Actually, after we finished Survive, the show we just did back in April, I kind of had a moment where I realized how many businesses in this industry are built to take advantage of actors. You know, they look at actors and they see just a cha-ching and they're not necessarily giving the best value back. I learned about that, and I also learned that there are really two kinds of actors. There are ones that are extremely good mimickers, who are very good at manufacturing emotion and displaying it. And there are actors who are so open and honest and just have done all this work that they can be completely available and present on stage and just react, you know, within the context of the script. And
I'm of the mind that there's a spectrum, actually. I agree with you, but I'm also of the mind... I'm sorry, excuse me. I'm also of the mind that there's a spectrum, that on one end you have the people that are very meticulous with their... mimicry, if that's what you want to call it, and on the other end, people who are extremely invested, if that was the other end of the spectrum, and that there's a happy medium or a good combination of those things, wherein you can sort of take a hodgepodge of multiple training methods and use them all. I don't know if I would have believed that with or without my training at UCLA, but that's kind of how their approach. Their approach was we're going to take this exercise from this acting method and this exercise from this acting method, and they kind of put it together. Like, if you go to UCLA, you don't hear from any one actor, or I'm sorry, any one acting teacher. We're going to learn Stanislavski today. We're going to learn Meisner today. You know, it's not like that. It's very sort of just a melting pot of all these good ideas, or ideas anyway.
Yeah.
Whether they're good or not, I guess is up to the actor.
Right.
But what I loved about that approach was it helped us all to. A couple of my acting teachers used to call it your toolbox. It helps us. It helped us all to build this toolbox of all these different tools And if one tool worked better for you than another as an actor, you could pull that tool out, mm-hmm. you know. Going back to what you were saying about the industry taking advantage of the actor, though, I definitely agree with that. And actually, yeah. I would hope that this podcast, one of our goals is to try and help other actors and other artists in LA sort of avoid those pitfalls and, you know, help them not to, you know, waste their money or waste their time or that, what have you.
That's the biggest thing. If I could recoup the thousands of dollars I've spent on stuff that got me absolutely nowhere but made me feel busy and feel productive, oh my God. Like, I mean, 6 years I've been out here and I can't even tell you the amount of time and money I've drained into stuff that was just, I was a sucker, you know? I was just being completely taken advantage of. And that really kind of got to me. I kind of was like, for a while, I was like, I don't want to be in this game if it's rigged like this.
Yeah, it makes you jaded. It does. It makes you jaded. The people, and that's the thing, is like the people who make it, more often than not, I mean, there's a million different stories out there, and I hate even saying the words make it in succession that. But the people who quote unquote make it, or at least are, let me rephrase, the people who are working actors in Los Angeles, I feel like are the people who are just very persistent. Mm-hmm. Very persistent. You got to get used to rejection. You got to get used to the way people are in this town, which I don't even want to get into. And if you can sort of rise above it, you will make it. You will see results.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a matter of time.
Persistence is the most important lesson I think anybody can be taught or learn. In fact, when I was kind of going through that burnout phase, and I'm still actually coming out on the tail end of it, the first thing I did was I went home and I opened up my copy of Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, that like classic self-help book. And chapter 8, I think it is all about persistence. And it's actually a pretty short chapter, but it is the most inspiring thing, where he just says nothing can stop you if you keep getting up and trying again. And it's so simple, but it's so profound. And it's like whenever I need a shot in the arm, I just go and I read that chapter.
That's great. Yeah. So repeat that book for everyone.
Oh, yeah. No, the book is called Think and Grow Rich. It's by Napoleon Hill. He's kind of the grandfather of the self-help, inspirational, motivational kind of genre of books. And it's like one of those must-have things on your bookshelf, I think, for everybody.
So we'll put a link to it on the website underneath this episode.
Yeah, or in the show notes or both or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
But what I was saying originally was, and then we'll move on, I promise, was that I kind of started to see actors in those two categories, the ones who are kind of mimickers and the ones who are actually honest and available. Mm-hmm. And, now that you mentioned the spectrum thing, I can see that. But what I started to see was I think I'm pretty damn good at being a mimicker, but I'm far from being actually honest and available and open on stage. And I don't quite know how to get there yet. And I've wasted plenty of money on acting classes and that kind of thing to want to try and get there through that. So I was like, I kind of sensed that this was a Trevor thing rather than like a thing that some acting class could help me discover. So I decided to kind of step away and really just kind of focus on other areas of art, which is why I wanted to make this podcast for artists and not just actors. Because while we are, like we said, kind of actor-centric in this podcast, and you and I are both actors first and foremost, there are so many different levels you can discover through different forms of expression.
Right. Well, Trevor is also a musician.
Yeah. Like, I've been into music, and I'm a huge believer in I think every actor should be, let me think of how to say this. The actors who are multidisciplinary, if that makes sense. Yeah. Like I, when I was a little bit younger, weird to say that, a few years ago, I went over to James Franco's house with one of my old roommates.
He went to UCLA.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, he's got a sick house up in, I think up in Studio City. And we went there, and he is just an incredibly prolific painter. And I don't mean prolific in the sense that like he has works out there that you can see in museums and buy. I mean, his entire house is filled with paintings. He has three rooms in the bottom floor that are just huge art studios with just paintings, wall to wall, floor to ceiling.
Of his paintings?
His stuff, work? Yeah. And I kind of remember looking at that and being like, wow, man, like he's not an actor. He's an artist.
Right.
And I really believe that that is a huge and very important distinction to make, you know, especially in a place like LA where I know I sound jaded and I don't mean to, but there are actors, which has a really negative stigma to it. And then there are artists, which I think nobody can kind of scoff at, because we're all artists to one degree or another, and everybody knows what that means. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows what actor means, and everybody knows what artist means. Right. And I think they're two different things.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I always have believed that, you know, doctors can be artists.
Sure.
You know, if you're doing open heart surgery, that's an art. You know, don't tell me that's not an art,
because yeah,
there's no, I'm sorry. Like, if you don't have, you know, steady hands, there's no class in the world that's going to be able to teach you how to have steady hands to do, you know, some crazy like open brain surgery or something, you know?
Yeah.
So, I'm in total agreement with that. Yeah. What is an artist? That's fantastic.
I think it's everybody. If you've ever looked at a cloud and thought, oh, that looks like a rhinoceros, you know, if you've ever organized your apartment and been like, that looks better, you are an artist. You are visually and spiritually attuned. Before we jump into the interview we have set up for this episode, Albert, you are probably one of the busiest actors I know.
Thanks.
No, I'm not just saying
that. I wish I was getting paid for it, too.
I'm not just saying that because we're recording, but every time I turn around, you've been casting something else that probably half the time you haven't even auditioned for, to be honest. So you've got a huge network of journalists and actor friends and director friends and producer friends, and you're always busy with something, and I know right now you're busy with something. So what's going on?
Thank you. I'm blushing.
Hey, it's the truth.
Thanks. Yeah, no, I do tend to go from show to show. It's been tough, actually, because, you know, you get tired, you know, and you're trying to work your day job,
of which you have several, which
I'm not even going to talk about. And
you can't actually, can you?
I can't talk about a couple of them. No, yeah. I can't. So yeah, I mean, you're working your day job and trying to pay rent, and then you go off and you do, you know, free theater. Even if it's, you know, I am an equity actor, I do belong to Actors Equity. The only union for stage actors in, I'm a member of, Actors Equity. And so, you know, even 99 seat house stuff is, $9, $11, $14, $15 a performance.
Damn, did you get 15 bucks?
Yeah.
I've only got 9.
What?
9 was the most I ever got.
Yeah. That. Well, it depends on the length of the run. There's different contracts. And actually, if it runs longer than, I just found this out, if it runs longer than 4 months, the actors start taking a percentage of the house, a percentage of the box office.
Four months is a long run.
I never knew. It is a long run. But it happens at this theater that I'm working at right now, called the Pacific Resident Theater, which is in Venice. This theater company's been around for a long time, probably like 25 years, maybe more. And a lot of the people who started the company and who now run the company are professors at UCLA. And that's how I, you know, sort of got a relationship with them, and have been wanting to do something with them for a long time. But they do have shows that run a long time. And so if you have a theater company like we do, or you want to work on something else, you know, if you're not getting paid that much, it's kind of tough to be in a show that runs for that long. But this opportunity came on along to be in a workshop production there with a 3-week run. And we closed this weekend, but it's called Loyalties. I'm playing a, it's funny, a 20-year-old young man of Arab descent who goes AWOL from the military. And the show is sort of about the fallout between my parents and the parents of my character's best friend, who was killed in action. These are no spoilers. You find out all this stuff in the first scene. So, it's been a great experience. I have done a lot of shows with regards to this subject matter, meaning the war, and it's been really great. Great audience reaction. And actually, I was just telling Trevor before we started recording, it's really funny what you know, if you go with your gut instinct, if you feel like you have a good gut instinct and you go with it from time to time, it will serve you well. And I feel like with this show, it was just kind of like, I had this gut feeling that like, this was a good role for me and I should do it. And it turns out that one really amazing ancillary benefit to the whole experience is that the director's wife is actually the head of casting for Sony.
That's a nice perk.
And she came to see the, she saw the show. She really liked it. She liked me, and she asked me for a dozen headshots to hand out to her casting directors. So, I mean, you never know. You know, you just never know. But that's what's keeping me busy right now. What's keeping you busy, Trev?
And you never know, before we move on to that, you never know who you're talking to out here, too. That's the crazy thing. Like, in your various day jobs.
Yeah.
I'm not just talking to you, but to everybody who might be listening. You never know, dude. Like, I remember I used to work at this one place where we'd have various people kind of walk through the door. And this guy came through the door once in, like, these ratty flip-flops, like, these torn-up, jean shorts, like, just clearly he hadn't showered in a few days. Like, I thought the guy was a bum, and I started talking to him, and he gave me his credit card, one of those black American Express cards.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be Doug Liman, the director of Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And it's just like, he was a cool guy, and he was just asking me questions about various things, and I was answering the best as I could. And you know, bam, there you go. It's like, you never know who you're talking to. And that's not just in LA, although it happens a lot more here.
That's how I got my first SAG voucher.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
What happened?
Mandy Patinkin.
That's right.
Remember that?
That's right.
Mandy
yeah.
Patinkin came into this place I was working, and I helped him out, and I was like, you know, I went to school for musical theater. I was so, like, I'm getting giddy just thinking about it right now, actually.
Mandy Patinkin's kind of a legend in the musical theater world.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. I mean, he's just, you know, he's done so much, and I went to school for musical theater. I kind of know who you are. And he was like, oh, really? You know? And this is before he left Criminal Minds. And he was like, are you still acting? And I said, yeah. And he's like, well, what kind of acting do you like to do? Is it just musical theater? And I was like, honestly, Mandy, I'll do whatever. You know, I was like, I really want to break into every possible avenue because I love doing it so much. And he's like, well, you know, I'm on the show on CBS. And I was like, yeah, I know you're on TV, man. It was kind of a bizarre conversation. And he goes, well, he's like, let me, you know, he's like, you have a headshot. He's like, send me your headshot and resumes. I'm sure you have. And I was like,
score.
I was like, no, Mandy. I was like, I'm a smart actor. I have my headshot and resume with me. So I went to the break room, got my headshot and resume, came back out, handed it to him. And he was like, yeah, sure. I'll hand this to, you know, our casting director, Scott something, is the casting director of Criminal Minds. And I said, okay,
oh,
great.
Oh, I know that. Scott David.
Scott David.
I've done a couple workshops with him.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's a nice guy.
He's a very cool guy.
Handed
the show
him
has
his...
such a high turnover that they bring actors in.
Right, right.
Lot,
well, and
so...
he does other shows too,
yeah.
I think. I'm not sure which, but yeah. And then he, you know, we said goodbye or whatever, he left. And that Monday, that was on a weekend. So that Monday, he must have walked into work, I guess, handed the headshot and resume to Scott, because I got a phone call from my agent saying, did you help Mandy Patinkin?
Like,
and
nice.
I was, yeah, I did. And so because I wasn't SAG, I'm still not SAG, I'm SAG eligible now, but because I wasn't even SAG eligible at the time, they couldn't really bring me in for any, you know, under fives or what have you. So they brought me in as a featured extra. And I got a SAG voucher thanks to Mandy Patinkin. So yeah,
that's,
I mean,
awesome.
Talk about not never knowing, you know, who you're talking to.
Yeah.
I knew who he was, but the point is that, you know, you never know who can help you out, who can give you a leg up, mm-hmm. you know.
And it's because you were helping him out. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
true.
It's that the whole saying, what goes around comes around, is so true. And
yeah.
The people who are up there, like the Mandy Patinkin level,
mm-hmm.
are always the most gracious people. You don't generally find assholes up there.
Yeah.
You find the really cool people.
Yeah. Well, hopefully. I mean, that's our...
Most of the time.
That's
yeah.
our hope, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's keeping
awesome.
You busy, Trev?
Yeah. Well,
you just shot again today, right? You were shooting.
Yeah.
You were on set today,
yeah,
right?
I shot another thing today. I shot this another episode of this kind of web series TV show for Spike TV called 1,000 Ways to Die.
It's on both TV and web, though.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And anybody who doesn't know what that is, if you're an actor in LA and you're on the breakdowns, you've probably seen it a bazillion times because it's also a very high turnover rate. But it's a little. I don't know. I haven't seen it actually. I went to the website. I Googled it when I booked the gig. I Googled it because I didn't know what it was, and I watched, and it's like, it looks like it's comprised of a bunch of little 3-minute episodes of various ways that people get killed doing stupid stuff, the Darwin Awards basically. But it's all like the people who usually eat it are usually people who are like evil, you know, they're bad people. So you kind of want to see them die in this horrible way. No, it's
Schadenfreude.
It's a pretty, let's just say the show is an acquired taste. But the first episode that I saw when I didn't know what it was, I booked it. And actually the booking is actually an interesting story too. But, I went and I saw, and I the first episode, the featured episode on that webpage is a guy, who buys a cow heart on the black market, hooks it up to a car battery and has sex with it. And they set it up. I'm not even kidding. I couldn't make this up if I wanted to.
Oh my
they
God.
Set it up. So he's like set up as this like redneck perv, you know, who like stares at little girls, you know, out of his window, you know, during the afternoon and then has sex with cow hearts. So basically wow. He turns up the voltage on his car battery and eventually electrocutes himself and the authorities find him with a cow heart on his
junk.
So anyway, that's kind of what I saw before I went and shot this episode a few weeks ago.
Oh, man. So finally, I bet you were really excited.
Well, I knew it was...
Or frightened. You
know, I mean, with a name like A Thousand Ways to Die, it can't be the most in-depth...
acting you've ever done in your life.
Ever done. But the episode that I shot was about a woman who really wanted to be a stripper. So she went to this doctor who was really sketchy, and she got some breast implants done, and the breast implants had... bubbles in them, I guess. So she gets on a plane to fly to Vegas, and I'm the guy who sits next to her, and she's extremely hot, and the actress who played this girl was extremely hot, so it wasn't... That's another funny story, actually. It wasn't difficult. I played... The name of my role was Cute Guy, and I showed up on set, and immediately the costume person comes out. As soon as I get there, she goes, "Who's Cute Guy?" She, like, shouts it out, and I'm like... I'm sitting there with like 15 extras, like just chatting it up with them, and I'm like, oh shit. And then I was like, well, I might as well make a joke out of it. So I was like, oh, that'd be me, you know, and I like raised my hand. And nobody fucking laughed. And I heard one dude next to me go, I'd think twice about that. Or something like that. And the costume director designer goes, oh, you're a cute guy? Okay, come on in. And I went, I was like, that wasn't funny. Like, I
don't know. No one got, well, did they know what your character's name was? I mean,
I don't know. Maybe they hadn't seen the script. Well, there isn't really a script, but maybe they hadn't seen it. But anyway,
that's so
and then
funny.
When we got on the plane, I was on the plane and I was walking up into it with this extremely hot actress. We introduced each other and then I sat down next to her and she goes, "Oh, then you're a cute guy." And I go, I was like, "What do you say?" So I was like, "Let me try and make a joke out of this." So I go, "What, you couldn't tell?" Yeah, she did not think that was funny.
Oh my God.
Dude, and she didn't say two words to me for the rest of the shoot. And I was like, she's so hot. I was like, how am I going to like talk to this girl? That was just the wrong note. Anyway.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
So in the episode, we take off on the plane, and as the air pressure in the cabin changes, the gas in her implants expands, and her chest explodes all over us. And so I got shot, literally shot with... fake blood and guts all day. And it was actually a lot of fun. But anyway, I got called back for that yesterday without even auditioning again. I guess they reuse a lot of actors.
Oh, great.
So like my agent just called me and said, "Hey, they want to book you on this." And I was like, "I didn't even audition. Do they know that?" And she's like, "Yeah." And I was like, "Well, this is a nice milestone to hit in my career."
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Getting called into TV shows without having to audition, that's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, it's a non-union show. It's like $100 a day, but hey man, I'll take it. I got paid to act today, so
that's right.
No complaints.
That's right.
So that was it. But other than that, I'm really just kind of working on music right now. I really, really have had a dream of producing, recording, writing my own EP of music that I want to get out there. So I'm kind of entrenched in not only that process, but also trying to find quiet places to record. Because in LA, you know, everywhere you go, you hear traffic.
Yeah.
So. I'm working on that. And that's about it. And then I'm hoping to get this our ensemble. Well, we can talk about it another time. Let's talk about the interview we got coming up.
Yeah, definitely.
This is an interview that I'm excited because we've had this in the works for a while. This is a woman named Brenda Adelman. She's an actress out here in LA. And what's really unique about her is not only is she an actor that writes her own work, she actually creates her own work, which I think is a huge thing for actors to be doing. There's no reason that you can't just get a camera or rent a space with some friends and put on your own show. I think everybody
there's
should
so
be...
many web series out there.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's so easy these days.
Yeah, and you can't discount them at all because I've had friends I can name several friends right now who started off doing web series stuff and are now booking, you know, recurring roles on television. So,
oh yeah,
you cannot discount that, especially nowadays with the way that, you know, internet media is so prolific.
With YouTube and Facebook and Vimeo, I mean, never before has the world been your audience. Mm-hmm. Literally, the world.
Mm-hmm.
Which is amazing. I know a few people have gotten started that way too. But what's great about Brenda is she's not only an actor that's creating her own work, but she's actually creating her own work based on a pretty traumatic event in her life that would probably put most people out of commission. And that event is that her father killed her mother and married her aunt. And there's really nothing more you can say about that except listen to the interview. It's really heavy stuff, but she is one of the most peaceful, loving people I have ever met. And what's also great, which we'll hear in the interview, is that not only is she doing that as an actor, but she's actually found a way to sustain her acting by creating a side business out of this same thing. She's gone through a lot of personal work to kind of forgive her father and come to terms with the things that happened. And she now helps other people do the same. And at the risk of sounding capitalistic, business is booming for her. She's doing incredibly well. And it's because she's doing something that's very valuable to people. And she's an amazing woman. So I'm excited for this interview.
Right. And she's also very passionate about what she does, which is great. So we'll leave the rest of the interview. Don't want to, you know, spoil too much. It's really great. Trevor talked to her for about 20 minutes.
It's actually like a half hour or so. Yeah. And I even had to edit some stuff out, but she's fantastic. The acoustics in the room we recorded in aren't the best, but I think it's all pretty clear. I gave her the good mic, so the important stuff is what you hear.
Great.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll see you, or we'll be talking with you after the interview.
Yeah. Let's jump in.